This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming around and hanging out with us today. We are recording another podcast with another fantastic guest, and I know that there's going to be a ton of value for our listeners out there. Today we are joined by Sam from Grubber. Sam, I appreciate you coming on. Why don't you give our audience a little bit about who Sam is and kind of where you came from, where is Sam from, and then we'll talk a little bit about Grubber and kind of how it came about and what's going on with Grubber over at your guys' organization.
Perfect. Well, thank you for having me on this morning. Where did I come from? Well, that's
where did you come from? Yeah, exactly. This could take a while, but we're good for it.
Yeah. So I was born in Detroit, but no, I'll I am a recovering attorney who found the fintech space, and about 3.5 years ago, I met a gentleman named Bhavin Asher, who is the founder of Grubber. And when the two of us connected, we definitely saw where the future was and where the restaurant technology industry was going, and decided to join forces, and kind of the rest is history, as they say at this point. So Grubber, we're really focused. We believe that the cashier ultimately is obsolete, and everything's leading towards self-ordering type technology. No different than, we used to go to the bank and we used to see a teller, and that teller got replaced by an ATM or online banking. We used to go to an airport and see a ticketing agent, and that ticketing agent got replaced by either a QR code on your smartphone or a bank of 40 kiosks that never have a wait. Mm-hmm. And our belief is the same thing was going to happen in the restaurant space. And it was going to be a combination of, kiosks, mobile ordering, and online ordering, whether through the company's website or through a third-party delivery service like an Uber Eats or a DoorDash. So, we said instead of, entering the crowded POS space and trying to build one iteration better, why not focus on this type of technology and actually play very, very nicely with all the existing point-of-sale infrastructure? Mm-hmm. So, we've partnered with, the Oracles and PARs and Squares and Clovers and NCRs of the world. And we play very nicely with their product, which also prevents businesses from having to replace that type of technology. So that's a long-winded answer to your question of where we came from.
Well, and I know we'll get into it, but I would be remiss if I didn't understand how does one go from being a lawyer to being a technologist? How did that gap happen? I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with you that's where, what your guys' vision for Grubber is unequivocally. I mean, you can go back probably 4 or 5 years, which was when we started recording, to a podcast where, I had somebody ask me that question, where do we think things are going? And I think it's going to end up being, wholeheartedly, I think it's going to be the guest that's going to control their experience, whether it's with the smartphone, to your point, whether it's going to be with the kiosk or some other, voice ordering, something along those lines. They're going to be ordering for themselves, no different than they've done with third-party delivery. But how do you find yourself as a lawyer making your way into fintech and into restaurant technology ultimately?
Well, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. Okay. And I figured you needed one of two things. You either needed money or you needed know-how. And I had no money, so I figured I better go get some know-how. And fortunately for me, out of law school, I worked at a firm called Skadden Arps. And the great thing about working at Skadden is every year you're there, they're kind enough to give you 3 years of experience.
They probably asked for 3 years of 3 years of effort as well, and that I love that. I'm gonna have to use that with some of my interns. It's like, yeah, you're gonna work here for 3 months, but you're gonna get a year's worth of experience in that 3 months, man. That's really funny. That's really cool. So you talk about Grubber. It sounds like you guys started the company and the product prior to COVID. Is that a fair statement? I'm sure that COVID has both. Accelerated as well as created its own set of challenges. Is that you know, kind of where you guys started. You guys started with an idea. Talk to me about some of those early days of where Grubber came from, the idea, because I'm in agreement with you. And I'm sure as you talked about some of those legacy platforms and platforms that are even new platforms that are now in the space, having to figure out how to engage with them and play nice is not always the easiest thing. But talk to me about the early days of Grubber and kind of how did that tech work? How did the idea work? And kind of where did you guys start? Because I think it will form a good basis for the conversation as we continue this morning.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, you know what they say: luck is the is when preparedness meets opportunity. Given where we are today, we've been the beneficiary of a fair amount of luck. But you nailed it, right? You know, when we first started, we saw this and we looked at it and said, "Where is the future going to be 10, mm-hmm. 15, 20 years from now?" And let's work backwards. Let's say, okay, this is where the future is going to be. So let's start developing that type of technology today. So when the time comes, we will have already paid the idiot tax. We will have already built the integrations. We will have already figured everything out and we'll be ready for it. It's not like we're the only ones that saw this vision. It's just everyone else looked at it and said, yeah, this is going to be a good 10, 15 years out. We're not going to invest today. We'll wait until the demand is there. Mm-hmm. We said, you know, instead of being, you know, one of, you know, 100 or 1,000 other point of sale systems, let's be the best in kiosk. Let's be the best in mobile ordering and go in that direction and really kind of own that space. So when, you know, the industry kind of catches up to us, will be the de facto standard. Well, you nailed it. Three things happened since then. One, COVID. Two, Joe Biden gets elected president, and one of his four platforms was a $15 an hour minimum wage on the federal level. And then the Great Resignation. And I would argue of the three, probably the Great Resignation has had the largest impact. In, you know, I think what accelerated this is COVID accelerated a lot of things, right? Yep. It, you know, but my personal belief is it takes about 30 days to form a habit. And we've had COVID for 2 years now.
Yep.
And as a result, these cashiers went and discovered other things, including the gig economy.
Uh-huh.
And they realized, wait a second, do I really want to, you know, work behind the counter, getting yelled at by my manager, getting yelled at by consumers all day, when instead, you know, I can go drive for Uber Eats or DoorDash, show up when I want, leave when I want. I can put my boyfriend or girlfriend in the car. I can jam on my tunes. I can go pick up a bag, drop it at somebody's door, ring the bell and run. And by the way, make as much, if not more money.
Yep.
And as a result, they're not coming back. And I would argue they're never coming back. And when that happens, there's only one answer. And that answer is automation. And what's happened is it's kind of caught everybody flat-footed. And they're all kind of scrambling for solutions. Listen, you know, other industries were more at the forefront, but the restaurant space specifically have been notorious laggards. Yep. When it comes to technology. And the main reason for that is because they were the beneficiary of low wages. So when you have low wages, you don't automate, you just throw cheap labor at the problem. And that cheap labor is no longer cheap and, you know, or accessible. And what we're seeing in the marketplace are restaurants limiting hours, restaurants closing, not for lack of demand, but no labor. So we've solved at least half of that. We solved the labor issue in the front of the house, you know, in putting the orders. We also, a lot of people aren't aware, we have arguably the most advanced KDS or kitchen display system. So that helps create more efficiency in the back of the house as well. So on the production side. So the whole idea is to take, you know, the cashiers that you have and the front office people you have and redeploy them in production so that you can keep up with the increased demand. The demand for you know, at restaurants now is at all-time highs.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and if you read the statistics, I mean, the pre-COVID levels of restaurant demand is actually at this point, from what I've read, at pre-COVID levels. But unfortunately, to your point, a lot of the restaurants are having a hard time staffing. There's a couple local restaurants here that have been closing in the afternoons because people just don't show up for work. So you're correct. Now, I know we've talked a lot about on the podcast in general, and we've talked a lot about the idea that that COVID accelerated restaurant tech adoption in a pretty significant way. But what you guys are doing is not new. I can remember back. I mean, I went to high school right near where Taco Bell's corporate headquarters were, and Taco Bell, their test store was my Taco Bell in high school. And when you were eating 59-cent tacos in high school, because all you had was $5 to eat, you were eating Taco Bell tacos back when it was not as innovative and not as it was a lot less expensive. We would go, and there was always this divide of adoption of the tech versus going to the cashier and whether the tech was perfect. How has that been through COVID and just in general? Because I think kiosks are not new. They're 30 years old. You know, talk to me about, you know, the airlines, you talk about the, you know, the rental car space. I mean, a lot of places, you know, the ATMs, kiosks are not new, but they haven't. Consumers as well as brands haven't necessarily taken to them up until the last couple of years. Why do you think that is? Do you think COVID has drastically accelerated that? Has it been a user experience thing? Has it been a cost thing? Has it been, you know, talk to me about what your thoughts are and kind of what you guys have been solving as it relates to that.
So you see, yes to all of those kind of questions. The hardware has been around. This is really a software issue, right? And well, I mean, look, McDonald's had kiosk technology. They were the real leaders, right? Uh-huh. So McDonald's has spent over $1 billion on kiosks.
Wow.
Their kiosk costs roughly $10,000 a device. And they spent roughly $150 million developing the software, and it's taken them over 5 years to develop it. But that's their IP. They're not going to go share it with anyone. And by the way, they've had unbelievable results as a result of rolling out that technology. What we have done is democratized it. We have made it accessible to everyone. Instead of having to spend $10,000 on the hardware, we've partnered with Samsung. And we're able to provide a kiosk solution on the hardware side at a retail price of $2,500.
Wow.
That's incredible. Dramatically less. Now, keep in mind, I mean, Samsung's the largest manufacturer of, you know, TVs, of telephones, of digital signage in the world. So they know a thing or two about developing that type of hardware. Mm-hmm. What we have done at Grubber is provide the software. And our software solution, instead of having to spend 5 years and $150 million developing it, you can have that software for less than $200 a month. So think about that. For less than $2,500 on the hardware side and $200 a month, any business, any restaurant can be up and running in a matter of days. So that's the big value proposition that we bring to the table. Now, how we've done that is we're on our 48th version of our UI UX, uh-huh. You know, and everything goes to that user experience. Being able to walk up to a kiosk with no assistance and be able to place an order faster than if you were dealing with a cashier, that's the magic behind the software. So nobody's even thinking about it. And that's what our team's done a masterful job of doing. And that's why our solutions are so popular. And what we've done is we've completely integrated to everything in that ecosystem. Yep. So normally when you walk into a restaurant, what you don't realize is those restaurant owners are typically running half a dozen to a dozen different pieces of disparate technology. And the problem is they're all siloed. None of them are talking to one another. And what we do is we come in and we start to communicate with everything. And then when you can start to communicate, you can start to fuse that data, and then you can take that and provide real value back to the restaurant owner and real value back to the consumer by improving their experience.
Yep.
You know, it's funny, you talked earlier about, you know, COVID and why people wanted to go to the technology. We, during the middle of COVID, or when it first kind of hit, we had a chain call us up, and they had about 10 locations, and they said, listen, you know, we need kiosks because none of our cashiers are willing to come into work. They're afraid they're going to die, which was common belief.
Yeah. Yes, very much.
And so we implemented our technology, and sure enough, they went completely cashierless. Not that they were forefront of technology, but really more out of necessity. Uh-huh. But then they called us up 30 days later and said, wow, what we didn't realize was that this actually increased our average ticket by between 40 and 50% between our different locations. And the reason for that is now you're able to provide that perfect curated client journey, no different than when you go online and order at Amazon or another e-commerce site, where all of a sudden, you know, I buy something at Amazon and they're giving me a bunch of recommendations on other things that I hadn't thought of, but they completely resonate with me. And I'm like,
they're part and parcel to that experience. To your point, you know, it's the upsell of the extra dessert. It's the upsell of the appetizer. It's the, do you want to add extra cheese, or do you want to add cheese or bacon to that burger or whatever, those kind of things. I agree with you. And I think it's interesting, because all too often, I think, you know, if we were to look at it, I'm sure your favorite restaurants that you and, you know, your family go out to dine at are the restaurants where they know who you are, where your drink is sitting at the table when you get there, because they know your family, they know your preferences. But that's almost impossible, if not impossible, in today's day and age, because you've got lots of staff turnover. You've got, you know, but everywhere else in the world, it's happening through Facebook, through Google, through Amazon. They are curating your experience, but the restaurants are historically really, really laggards. I mean, all retail in general. Grocery, you know, restaurants, retailers are all really struggling to figure out who that consumer is. Is that a fair assessment? Is this something you guys figured out through this process?
100%. And that's exactly what we've been able to do, is now put that power back in the CMO's hands, back in the owner, so they can provide that experience as if they were the only ones working there. Right?
Yep.
They can't do it because they can't be everywhere. But now, you know, it's easy to train your staff like the fast food places do, and say, when you're ordering your burger, do you want fries with that? But the chances are, if you're ordering a salad, you're not going to order fries.
Yep.
But would you take a fruit cup or a healthy drink? Potentially.
Yep.
So customizing the upsells, putting the inline ordering, allowing people to customize the things the way they want. And by the way, you know, creating that additional value to the restaurant owner or manager, significantly better. It also improves the customer's experience.
Yep.
You know, first off, you can eliminate lines. Why? You can put in as many kiosks as you want, uh-huh. Right? So you can eliminate the line altogether. Second, your order's always right. Why? Because you entered it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, how many times you go into a restaurant, you're like, I'd like the cheeseburger with extra pickles, no ketchup. And the guy's like, got it. Extra ketchup, no pickles.
Yeah.
And what happens? You get the burger. It's wrong. You're upset. You got to wait 5 to 10 minutes while they make a new one. The owner's upset because he just took a perfectly good hamburger and threw it in the garbage.
Yep.
Well, all that can be eliminated.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, because about 10 years ago, we developed a kiosk technology at the company that I work for. And one of the things that we found, a lot of the same benefits that you're finding, but probably the biggest, I don't say downside to the restaurant brand, was that because everything was modified, it made the pass where they were passing out the food significantly more difficult. Did you guys run into that where, you know, everything, you know, in the past, especially at casual dining, when you've got the burger sitting there, you know, and it had the lettuce and tomatoes and pickles on the side, you might not, you know, you might not order it without the tomatoes or without the pickles, because you know what, you've eaten there before, you know that they're on the side, you know, it's not that big of a deal. We found, or at least this brand that we had developed this you know, customer self-order technology for, was running into challenges because everything looked so similar coming out of the kitchen, but they couldn't remember, oh, is that the one without the pickles, or is that the one, you know, and so they had to figure out another solution to that. Did you guys experience any of that with some of the brands that you guys work with?
So we ended up with I'll give you a couple stories that kind of hit that point. We were with a very large chain, couple thousand locations. We run our pilot. Everything's going well. They call us up after about 30 days and they're like, listen, can you turn off one of the kiosks? And we're like, oh, wow, did something break on the hardware? They're like, no. Problems with the software? No. We're like, what seems to be the problem? They're like, well, you know, we used to have this long line and now because of the kiosk, there's no more line. You know, everybody's able to get their orders in. But now we're completely backed up in the kitchen and the kitchen can't keep up with the food.
Yes.
Now, you know, great. You know, you saw we eliminated, you know, a friction point and now they had to go fix the next one, which was, hey, you know, you eliminated those couple of cashiers, go retrain them to prepare the food and you'll solve your problem. That was one instance of that. And you're changing the operational flow as well of the restaurant. And the design of restaurants will change as a result of this technology, no different than the design of an Apple store is different than traditional retail store.
Absolutely.
The other instance we had is another large, well-known burger chain. And we went in there and after the first day, we had increased their average ticket by over 60%. And we're like, whoa, we're crushing it. And they called us up and they're like, we got to pull back some of these upsells. The kitchen's completely overwhelmed with all this customization. Yep. So we pared it back and now they're at 18% uplift, but the kitchen's able to keep up with it because, you know, the clients had every option and it was really just slowing down on the production side. So there is some give and take, especially given, you know, the current environment where labor is not, you know, readily available.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you talk about it. Cause I know for us, it was definitely more challenging and you talked about it early on that restaurants, I don't want to say lazy because they're not lazy necessarily, but they didn't necessarily innovate their way out of some of these problems. And you look at how efficient a kitchen is at a McDonald's or efficient is a kitchen is at Taco Bell, is they've got such a systemized process. And you go into some of these other brands that haven't invested in that as soon as you throw the extra 10 or 20 or 30% of sales on top of it, the kitchen just crashes and the guest experience is there. And so part of why I talk about these things is there's going to be people from this that are going to listen to what you guys are doing and go, I need what Grubber has, but just understand that you're going to have to consider investing not just in the tech out front to solve some of the cashier issues, but also investing in, you know, the food packaging, the food preparation, because it does end up meaning that a lot more people are going to modify their experience.
Absolutely. And you know, there's tech on that side too, right?
Yep.
You know, the KDSs of the world will definitely help smooth that part of the transition.
Absolutely. So I'm going to pivot a little bit here, Sam, and just to ask, how was the customer adoption side of things? Because I know in general, people are typically resistant to change, especially if I'm going to the same place every Tuesday. You guys launched just before COVID, but there's a lot of guests that go, I don't want to deal with any of that. I've always gone up and talked to Sam. Sam's my guy. I'm going to talk to Sam. I'm going to order my food from Sam. I'm sure you guys had to thread that knothole at some point. And back to your point, 30 days to make a habit. I remember the first time I walked into an airline and I didn't get to go talk to a ticket counter. I'm like, this is, you know, and some of the early UI UX was pretty bad, as you probably recall. Talk to me a little bit about what the guest adoption looked like in some of these things and how you guys were able to help overcome, because change is hard. Humans are you know, like consistency. And so I think across the board, you guys probably had some ways that you guys needed to help restaurant brands solve the guest adoption stuff, not just the staff adoption side of implementing this technology.
You know, actually, it wasn't as arduous as you would think. I mean, first, this isn't 1950 Norman Rockwell painting with, you know, Joe behind the soda fountain counter. Uh-huh. Golly gee, it's great to see you again here today, right? I mean, let's explain, you know, talk about what the real experience is. The real experience is, as a cashier, you walk up, you know, they're not going to look you in the eyes. Chances are you've annoyed them because they were busy on a TikTok or whatever they're looking at on their phone, and you're just an annoyance trying to place an order. That's the experience most people are seeing these days. COVID obviously helped because no one wanted to interact with other people, especially uh-huh. strangers, because they were afraid they could get sick. But you know, the numbers are over 80% of people would prefer dealing with self-ordering technology than going and dealing with a live person.
Yep.
And a lot of that's changed because, you know, kids these days are born out, you know, out of the womb with a device.
Yep.
And that's just how they interact. And they don't want the delay of dealing with having to talk to somebody. You know, I joke, my grandkids are going to probably have a laugh when I explain the old days where we used to give somebody your order, and they're going to look at you and go, are you kidding me? Why would you tell somebody what you need? Why wouldn't you just do it yourself? That's inefficient.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been doing that for thousands of years. But I think that's changing now. People are used to this. So it wasn't as large a lift even before COVID. Obviously COVID's, you know, taken that to a whole nother level, but even before COVID, we weren't seeing, you know, that as a heavy lift to train people, because they've already been trained. They've been trained on their phone. They've been trained on their iPad. They've been trained, as you rightfully stated, in many other industries
yep.
where the technology has been implemented.
Yeah. And then how do you guys overcome? And again, I've probably been accelerated with the labor shortage, but I know in restaurant technology, there's always you're just trying to get rid of all of the people that work here. Do you not care about the people that work here? Do you not care about the brand? I see your face as we're recording this, and I can't help but laugh, but I agree with you. I'm on board with all of this technology, and I think it's going to only make the restaurant experience, you know, and I don't think that there's, my personal experience, I don't think there's a place for Grubber or any of these other self-order technologies at the experiential places, the places where you're going for a date night, you're going for an anniversary dinner, you're going to have an experience. But I think in the run-of-the-mill, you know, I'm just there to have dinner after soccer practice, whether it's quick serve or even casual dining, I think there's absolutely a way that technology can enhance that experience. I think that there's going to be, you know, so yes, at Ruth Chris, I don't anticipate that Grubber or any other self-order technology is going to be sitting at every table and you're going to not talk to somebody. But if I want Ruth Chris on my way home because I've got that income level, ordering from my phone and picking it up might be something I do. But as I'm sitting down and having a three-hour business dinner, I probably am not going to be using a piece of technology to do that. But how do you guys overcome that objection? Because you do get a lot of people that have a passion to make sure that that their employees stay, you know, taken care of or whatnot. And that is a thing, I guess, that you guys have to overcome. I'm trying to continue to tee you up for all of the objections that you guys continue to get, so that restaurateurs go, no, this is why we're solving these things. This is why we're solving these. This is how we're solving this.
Well, when we first got into space, that was a concern. So, you know, we had to kind of walk on eggshells because, wow, if you put our technology in, yes, the cashier disappears, and that's a displacement of workers, no different than tellers being displaced at banks. But here's the funny little secret. You know, tellers are gone at banks. There are more bank employees today than there were before.
Yep, I try and remind people that same thing, and they're like, "What? How is that possible?" I'm like, "Because there's a lot more branches now. You used to have to drive 20 minutes to get to a, I mean, I used to have to drive 20 minutes to get to a Bank of America, and now there's a Bank of America on every corner. To you know, yeah. to your point, because they can open them up a lot more efficiently.
Yeah, what happens is you end up moving people to higher and better jobs, right? There's no real value being created by a cashier. That's why they're obsolete.
Yep.
But now you can create better, higher paying jobs in the restaurant for these types of employees. And as for, you know, today and for the future, these people aren't coming back. There's no jobs, period. There's vacancies, there's signs, people are looking to hire, but they're not there. The restaurants are closed. They need workers. And if workers aren't going to come in the door, the only thing that can allow these restaurants to open is technology.
Yep.
And then you can take those remaining workers and have them actually in production and the other facets of the business. So we're not eliminating jobs, we're solving jobs. You know, it's funny, you know, people come to us because we solve labor, right?
Yeah.
We allow you to open your doors, we allow you to be able to process transactions utilizing our technology. Now, if you compare the value proposition of a cashier at, call it $15 an hour versus the kiosk, well, you're going to save over $6,000 a month for every cashier position you can eliminate. So if you have 3-4 cashier positions, you decide to take it down to one, you're saving, you know, $12,000 or $18,000 every month. It's not to say cashiers make $6,000 a month. They don't. Yeah. But 3 or 4 cashiers working that month do make that amount of money. So, you know, we used to say, here's this a big OPEX savings, and the CFOs love this before COVID. Now it's just a matter of we solve labor. You know, I can't tell you how many restaurant owners we talk to that they're like, forget $15 an hour. At $20 an hour, I can't find anybody to come in here and work. That's my issue. So the fact is, at least for half the, you know, problem, we can solve the labor issue in the front of the house.
Totally makes sense. I'm going to pivot a little bit, Sam, to say during kind of your description of how you guys came about, you talked about the existing technology that sits in the restaurant. And for the most part, that's the traditional point of sale. That's Oracle, that's NCR, that's PAR, that's, you know, XPN, you name it. There's lots of players. Most of our audience knows who those players are. That must have been an eye-opener for you and your co-founder, I'm guessing, to figure out how difficult it was to interact with those brands in the past. I can tell you that that having done this for 25 years, most people that come in from the tech perspective go, oh, there's going to be an open API. I'm going to be able to write to it. I'm going to be able to read from it. I'm going to be able to pick up the menus from the point of sale. I'm going to be able to insert an order back into the point of sale. Easy peasy. And it's done. Well, I am certain you didn't find that to be the experience that you guys came across, because I've been in the space, like I said, almost my entire life. And I know that that is not easy to do that. Talk to me a little bit about that journey and kind of how you guys overcame, you know, the interaction with the existing point of sale that might have cost them $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in there. And they're not ready to replace it because it is what is their kind of centerpiece of their restaurant technology stack. You guys have augmented it with Grubber being able to interact with those things. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, early on, that was exactly the problem. The issue, forget, you know, and you very succinctly nailed what their current status of their APIs to many of these brands look like. But, you know, the issue wasn't even being able to was not even being able to access it, right? They didn't even want to give, quote, the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, to allow you to integrate. COVID and everything that we've kind of spoken about, you know, forced this on them, right?
Yep.
Their clients called screaming, we need solutions. They don't have solutions.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, let's talk about what the real kiosk space looks like. They're kiosk, our quote kiosk competitors fall in typically 3 categories. POS systems turn sideways and they say it's a kiosk.
Yep.
An app on an iPad. Both of those don't work for clearly obvious reasons. And the third is custom software. McDonald's is an example of that. Yum Brands is an example of that. But most most companies don't have $100 million, let alone $1 million to and 5 years to take a flyer on it. So that's where we're able to be helpful. Now, what ended up happening is the Oracles and the PARs and the NCRs all of a sudden stopped seeing us as, quote, a competitor, and saw us as a very necessary component for the survival of the restaurant.
Yep.
And they started not only giving us API access, but dedicating resources to helping us, because they saw how integral this was. And then we've now have partnerships with these groups where they'll bring their clients to us because they realize that we are a fully integrated solution that works seamlessly. And we allow the POS to continue to be the place of truth for the sale, and we digest in the menu, and then we're able to provide it in a manner that's allows for a perfect client journey. Uh-huh. I mean, restaurants, and if you look at the restaurant space, let's break it into two categories. There's the SMB, and then there's enterprise.
Yep.
The only innovations that we've really seen in restaurant technology have been in the SMB side, whether it's Square, whether it's Toast or groups like that. And the reason you see it in SMB is because the barrier of entry is so low, right? Yes. I'm talking to you, I show you the new fancy new POS system, you're like, I'll take it. And a day, a week, a month later, you're up and running. That's not how things work in enterprise. You're talking years to implement new technology. And that's why there's only a handful of players that really play at enterprise. And that technology really hasn't evolved. And that's where we're really one of the first pieces of new technology at enterprise that plays nicely with the existing infrastructure that allows those brands to now be able to provide solutions without having to spend 7, 8, 9 figures to go and develop something in-house.
Love that. And again, I think it's an interesting conversation because all too many of the operators that we do end up talking to, and I know much of our audience knows that you and I are kind of in a similar space. We sell primarily point of sale, but the podcast is really to expose people to people like you guys, because whether they know you guys exist or not, I want them to understand that I want our listeners to understand that having your current infrastructure and your current business processes and everything that's wrapped around that is critical to making sure that you keep some level of continuity for the staff members that you have, but augmenting it with a product like yours, that it is very difficult and was really difficult in some of your guys' early days, but you guys have overcome that.
Absolutely. But to your point, we're not a rip and replace shop.
Yep.
We're not coming in and saying, oh, you want to do business with Grubber? Well, you need to take all of this legacy equipment and toss it out. Well, you've spent tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars invested in that technology, not to mention the amount of training, throughout, God knows how many, locations you have and employees.
Yep.
So this allows people to put their toe in the water, get all the good and the benefit from it without having, a huge CapEx expenditure. In fact, what we like to tell people is the minute you put our technology in, we're instantly accretive. So you're actually day one making more money when you put our technology. It's not wait 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years to recover that cost. You're instantly accretive because of, one, the cost savings on the labor side, and the increase in revenue on the by increasing the average ticket. So those two make this an accretive business decision.
I love it. What did we miss, Sam? I know we've kind of gone all over the gamut. Like I told you pre-show, we were going to kind of bounce around, and there was going to be a whole bunch of different areas that I was going to kind of pivot to. And I love all of the conversation, because I think way too many restaurant brands look at what you guys do and go, I'd love to do that someday, but it's too hard, but it's going to be too expensive, but it's going to take too long, but I'm going to get kickback from my staff. I mean, you've heard all of the excuses in the book. And so I love that you've been able to share so much of what Gerber's been doing over the last couple of years to help restaurants solve not just the labor problem, but the sales problem and the consistency problem and the increase in sales. I mean, you guys have so many different points, and the fact that you guys can integrate with existing technology. What have we missed that we should be talking about today?
Yeah, I would, you know, even though we don't manufacture it, the Samsung kiosk itself is a pretty remarkable piece of hardware. Because if you look at what the traditional kiosk was before this, it was really three pieces of technology, or three components to a kiosk. It was the metal, the shell. Then there was the electronics that got plugged into it, and then there was the software.
Yep.
Well, what Samsung was able to do is take those first two and meld them into one.
Yep.
So you no longer had this like cobbled together, you know, piece of metal with internal components. So when you actually pull it back, there was a regular printer and a, you know, all these different things plugged in. It's one power supply, one board. You know, they have antimicrobial screens so that you don't have to worry about viruses or anything of that sort. So that type of technology is, you know, from a hardware perspective, is in being able to bring it at a cost that democratizes it to everyone. That in itself was the missing piece of the puzzle for us. And then tying everything into the ecosystem, you know, we touch each facet of it, whether you're utilizing our technology or not. So we talked about how we integrate and play very nicely on the POS side. Well, we do the same thing on the loyalty side. So whether you're dealing with, you know, Punch or Level Up or Paytronix or whoever you use for your loyalty side, we tie in there. So we tie into all these different disparate pieces to technology and allow them all to communicate. We also talk to the digital menu boards. And we can now say, you know, we know that you're out of avocados. Well, guess what? Guacamole can come off the menu.
I love that.
So now you don't have that white out or a piece of cardboard on the menu board.
Yep.
Saying sold out, right? It's just as if it never existed, or you can have it say sold out, whatever your preference is. You can change pricing in real time. You can, you know, have happy hour pricing at 5 o'clock and have it change back at 7 o'clock. So you can reorder items based on, you know, we have some machine learning built into it. So based on weather, time of year, time of day, and order frequency, the items on the menu will change. And with the most likely items to be ordered being on the, you know, far left, uh-huh, and then moving towards the right. Again, so you can speed people through the process. So all of this, which was very expensive technology that companies like McDonald's have invested in and could pay for, we're now making them available to every business, whether they've got a handful of locations or a few thousand locations.
Love that. And I love the phrase that you use, the democratization, because I think as technology becomes not only more efficient, it becomes less expensive oftentimes for these people. It does create innovative companies like yours and many others that are in the space to say, how do I solve this problem? And I love that you guys are solving that. I love that you guys are solving that and making it, you know, bringing it to consumers at a cost that's not $10,000 a lane. That's not $15,000 a lane. It's, you know, $2,500, like you said, per kiosk to get those things in there. And I think for so long, that only the biggest of the big could invest in these things just because it was so expensive. And then tack on top of that, the fact that the tech stack wouldn't play nice with others like you guys. So, you know, back to your phrase of, you know, luck is where, you know, preparation and the circumstances, you know, meet. You guys got some real good, not that we would ever call COVID lucky, but I think from a tech space, it did help you guys to gain a foothold to be able to do the things that you guys needed to do.
Yeah, the other advantage we have, candidly, being partnered with Samsung is on the supply chain.
Yes.
Right now, I think everybody's heard of the chip shortage. And most touchscreen type technologies that are implemented inside of kiosks, they're quoting November, December ship times.
Yeah, 6 to 12 months.
And fortunately for us, you know, Samsung is the largest manufacturer of chips out there, so they manufacture their own. So there are no issues, and fortunately, we're able to get a seemingly endless supply, which allows us to move quickly to accommodate the needs of our clients.
I love that. Well, Sam, I can't thank you enough for not just the education. I mean, sharing what you guys have done at Grubber, but I think there's, even if people choose, I mean, I'd love to have people choose to engage with your team and talk more about it. But I think across the board, there's a ton of stuff that I personally learned, and I know that our audience will have learned from what you shared. If they want to get in touch with you and your team, what would you suggest are next steps? Do they just hit your website? Do they hit, trade shows? Talk to me a little bit about how they should engage with your team in order to take next steps to learn more about what Grubber's doing in the market space.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the easiest place is just going to Grubber.com, and it's GRUBBR.com. And they'll obviously get routed to the appropriate person for their territory. We are at most national and regional shows, and you not only find us in our own booths, but typically we're featured in many of our partners' booths as well. So you'll see us all over the place, but I would encourage everyone to kind of go to our website, and our team would be more than happy to show them how the solutions can work for them and walk them through an active demo at their convenience.
Love it. Well, to our audience, guys, we know that you guys have tens of thousands of choices of who to listen to out in the podcast world. So I appreciate you guys spending, the 45 minutes to an hour with us every time we post one of these things. Sam, thank you so much for your time. Like I said, and like Sam just said, go check out Grubber online. I will put the link to the website in the show notes. While you're online, if you guys haven't already done so, go give us a podcast rating, as well as share this episode with your friends. Sam, thank you so much for your time.
Jeremy, thank you for having me on. And the other thing, you can always check us out on social media. We're on all those as well. Thanks again for having me on today.
I love it. And same with the Restaurant Technology guys. You guys can always go check us out on Twitter, on Facebook, and all the likely places. Sam, have a fantastic day. And to our audience, thank you guys for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.